Folks, if you're liking what you're getting from 30 MPC, the number one way you can support us is by subscribing to our newsletter. Every week, you only get two emails. On Monday, you get a content roll-up of everything that dropped last week. And on Fridays, I pick one topic and I personally write a deep dive on things like how to cold call, how to run a discovery call, or even how to hire an AE. So if you're liking what you're getting here, take 2 seconds, go to the show notes. You'll see a button to subscribe to our newsletter, or you can go to 30mpc.com/newsletter and do it there. We'll catch you soon. Cheers.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. I'm your host, Nick Sigelski, joined with my co-host, Jen Allen Knuth. And today, we've got Jacob Karp, who works in strategic enterprise sales over at Rubrik. And folks, if you've ever wanted to know how to get the most cash for your squeeze out of your commission comp plan, and if you've ever wanted to know how to sell to security, which is one of the toughest places to sell to, this is one I think you're going to want to listen to. Jen? Why should people listen?
I think I learned more from this episode than any other episode we've done together. Jacob gets into really, really nitty gritty things about do's and don'ts of selling to CISOs, using your comp plan to set the guide of what you need to accomplish as a salesperson, and shares some really creative outreach strategies I frankly have never considered before. So definitely tune in.
And a 3, a 2, a 1, let's jump in. Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes. Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes.
Today's tactic to triple your connect rate is brought to you by Rocket Reach, who provides data that lets you reach out to the right person at the right account at the right time. Every time you're reaching out to an account, pull down the contacts again. Yes, I know it sucks, but the average tech tenure is 2 years, which means 50% of the workforce turns over every year. So look up the account, pull anyone who was hired, and scratch anyone who was left. And one way you can pull verified and accurate data is with Rocket Reach. So if you like this, check out their toolkit on 8 ways to triple your cold call connects in the show notes.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes. All right, Jacob, welcome to the show. We start every single interview with your top 3 actionable takeaways. So let's get your 3.
Yeah, let's get into it. So first off, for sellers, the comp plan is your roadmap. As you start a year or as you come into a new job, you should be reading that comp plan because it helps you understand what it is the company is asking you to do. For instance, are certain products more lucrative? Are certain deal structures more lucrative? Are there accelerators, decelerators? Understand this so you can understand how to spend your time.
Beautiful. What's number 2?
Next up, as we know as sellers, time is your greatest resource. So the ability to prioritize your top accounts, stack rank the territory, use qualitative and quantitative data that informs which accounts are going to be the best to spend your time in. For instance, let's say your company is super strong in financial services or insurance, and 20 of your 100 top accounts are financial services or insurance. You should be spending time in that industry and prioritizing that sector.
Beautiful. Round us out. What's number 3?
And I think we would all agree, Nick and Jen, that you need to be able to stand out from the pack with your outreach. You need to be creative in the way you go about it, but you also have to bring a well-articulated POV and hypothesis so that you're bringing something that's relevant to them, but also is engaging with them to get into a meeting. Some of the things that I used to love to do and still do today are lunch and learns. I want to show up at your building slightly unannounced, maybe scheduled. I might bring a food truck. I want to have that conversation where I get a little opportunity to tell you about my POV and hypothesis, but also we get to jam back and forth.
I love it. So, Jacob, I recently got engaged and I'm planning a wedding. And one thing that my fiance is very interested in is having a food truck at the wedding. And I'm sitting here thinking, how on earth am I going to pay for that? Let's say that I just been handed a new comp plan and I'm trying to figure out how to make some extra dough to afford some extra, an In-N-Out truck at the wedding.
Oh, I like that.
What are the things I should be looking for and how should I be dissecting my comp plan to make sure that I can afford whatever I want to buy?
It's a great question, Nick. And I think a lot of sellers, we just think that a comp plan is not something that we have any impact on. We're not going to be able to change it. We're going to have to sign it at some point, but we should be spending the time to understand what the company is incentivizing us to do, right? So when you go through that comp plan, you should be understanding what product mix do they want us to go prioritize that we're selling. So if there are five products that I can sell, but one of them happens to be paid out at a larger stake, that tells me that the company is looking to push that product or that part of the platform. I should prioritize that in my deals. I also want to understand what is the deal structure that gets me the most commission. Are three-year deals incentivized? Is it a one-year deal? Is it prepay? Is it annual pay? These are the little triggers that as we advance in our sales career, we start to pay attention to and actually understand how it is we should go structure our deals. And then lastly, I think this is one that most sellers will look at. When do I hit accelerators? At what percentage? Also, are there decelerators? If I kill it, and I get to 300%, do I go back to making my base rate? I hope not, because that's the company telling me, like, hey, just go chill out when you hit 300%, Jacob.
So let's say you read your comp plan that there is an incentive for selling a multi-year deal. What do you do with that information then? What looks different as a result of reading that in your comp plan?
As a seller, that's always in your head, right? So when I'm going into like early meetings, or I'm thinking about like how I might address this prospect or this campaign, I'm thinking about all through the sales process, how am I going to be like structuring the conversations, preparing them to have a financial conversation that deals with 3 years early and often, because we want to socialize that. I'm not telling them that makes me more money. That would get me in trouble. They probably wouldn't like that. I always want them to be thinking, hey guys, we do 3 year deals. If it comes up where they say, why do you do 3 year deals? I need to be ready to answer that question articulately, truthfully. But I'm always shaping their brain and their buyer mindset to think about a 3 year deal.
Yeah. One of the things that I have learned is that your buyer doesn't care about you making more money. Your buyer cares about what's in it for them. And so what you might consider doing when you get that comp plan is looking at all the things that you want, how you want to structure your deals to make the most amount of money, and then figuring out how can you position a longer term deal or additional seats up front in the buyer's best interest. I'm curious about deals that might be, you started them, you got a new comp plan, now you might want to restructure it. Do you have any advice for folks who might want to go back to the customer and say, hey, actually, I think we might want to change the terms?
If you want my unbridled answer on that, I don't have advice there. I think at the end of the day, like your reputation, your integrity as a seller is probably, hopefully for most people, what matters more than anything, Nick. So for me to do an about face or a pivot, I have two options. I either don't do it at all, which is probably where I side, or especially if you built a strong champion and you're closely aligned, you may actually be able to go to them and say, hey, this thing changed. They're asking me, and this is a secret conversation with your champion, right? They're asking me to change the way we structure this. It would behoove me, but I'm going to look for a way for it to behoove you too. And if we can't find a mutual place in the middle, probably might just have to scrap it and say, I'm making less, but I'm doing right by my customer.
Sounds very transparent. Todd Capone would be pleased. I'm with you. I think one of the examples, Nick, on that question, when I was selling Challenger, I remember we had a new product come out and there was a huge kicker, Jacob, to your point, to sell that new product. But I was late stage already and we'd already had a formal proposal. So one of the ways I did it was I looked at what is a likely failure reason for this and then tied it back. And then I took it on myself to say, when we were talking about this, there's something I missed. And as I was thinking about your implementation, I realized that there's this risk factor we didn't talk about. Would you be okay if we spent a few minutes talking about this? So it's like leading with the risk factor versus leading with the new product.
Yeah, it's an important balance and it's a great way to go about it. Because again, you've got to do what's right by them, but we're also trying to do what's right by us and the company in the middle.
Cool. So at this point, I know all the things that I should be thinking about to maximize my comp plan. Let's move into now. One of the big things that you and I were talking about on the prep call was you're extremely intentional as it relates to how you carve up your territory. Talk to me about your general thinking around how you're carving up your territory.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's such a good lead in, right? Because the company and the comp plan has told us, here's where you should go spend your time from a product mix perspective, net logo, all the stuff you mentioned. Now we as sellers, it's our job to look across our territory and think to ourselves, how are we going to stack rank this? How are we going to prioritize certain accounts? One of the examples I gave is in a certain industry, if you're strong, you use that. But there's so many different data points that we can leverage. And I think whether you're at a startup or like an early stage company or a mature company, you can find these data points. So just some of the ones that I think about. If your company has any ICP data, ideal customer profile data, you should be using that hands down, right? That should be the one of the first things you look at because it's an indicator of people with propensity to buy in a certain sector that look like other customers. I also want to understand total addressable market in an account. So if I go spend all the time it's going to take, especially in a net new logo, if the company's incentivizing that, probably going to take a significant amount of time. If I go do that, is there a run or a track to a larger deal somewhere else within that company? So one, is my time worth spending there? I love also past opportunities. I want to see what accounts have we touched before. That's an indicator of whether I can go have a warm conversation. Evident use case is another one. For folks who may not have the deepest data set or they don't have the time to get super pinned in on how they're researching their accounts, it's what are the evident use cases that you can see or that you know applies to a certain sector of business. Past champions is another one. Mobilizers, which oftentimes is a past champion as well. And then one thing that people should always be thinking about, especially if they need to generate pipeline quickly, where can I get warm intro and referrals? So I take all of that. That was a lot. I take as much of that as I can find. I put it in a G sheet or an Excel spreadsheet in columns, and I basically score out my accounts, and I'm looking for that top 25 to 33% of my accounts to really focus my time on.
Just to give me a sense, how many accounts do you have in your territory?
I actually just made a switch, Jen. Previously, for the past 10 years, I have 15 to 40 accounts. I have the time to go figure out what are my top accounts, get super deep in them. I actually just made a transition at Rubrik. I'm now covering a region. I have nearly 1,000 accounts. So what's exciting about this conversation today is everything I just told you, I am actively doing during my day-to-day situation. And I'm having to relearn how to think about a lot of these things because like I've got a lot more to cover.
So what's the starkest difference? Because I think that's a really interesting thing. What are some things that you're changing that you didn't do before that you've started to do now to still not lose the focus, but be able to get yourself answers without being like, it's December, I finally prioritized my accounts.
It's a great call out. So in that 15 account scenario, like you do not have an excuse to not know almost everything about all of those accounts, to your point. When you have 1,000 accounts, that's when you have to really get focused on what's that top 20%, we'll call it. Maybe it's less, right? Maybe it's that top 10%, it's that top 100. I want to know as much as I can about them while scaling that. The next 30%, so like 20 to 50%, I want to know some things because I still want to be able to do some pipeline outreach and leverage my ecosystem. That bottom 50% is somewhere I haven't played in a while. And that for me, it's how do I use generalized relevancy? And that's a term I've been telling myself about lately, is like, that might go back to the use cases, right? I'm not going to know everything about business 500 to 1,000, but I'm going to know if you're in a certain sector, this particular use case hits on your risk as a company from a cybersecurity perspective. I can use that, automate a little bit, get some outreach out the door and try to pique some interest.
How are you managing the messaging that you're sending to those bottom 50 percentile accounts? I guess I'm curious about how much variance you have, not for the like the top stuff, but for those, I should reach out to them, but they're not my top focus accounts.
So something about me is I am pretty against sequencing, me personally, but it comes from that 15 account mindset. So the variance is not huge. if I'm running sequences or something close to a sequence that might not even be fully automated, there's probably 4 to 5 talk tracks. And it either applies to particular personas or particular challenges that the businesses have overall. Now, yes, I will use some automated tools to get that out the door. I'll leverage our SDR team. One thing I'm really big on too, how do I enable my ecosystem to go sell for me? How do I enable different people in the business, partners, channel partners, like friends who sell into similar circles? How do I go tell them the story at scale so they can go tell someone on those accounts, hey, you should meet with Jacob and Rubrik?
So how are you doing that, Jacob? Are you just like texting Jen and being like, yo, I'm selling to CISOs. I think you talk to them sometimes. Here's a one pager on us. So I'm curious, how have you gotten other people in the ecosystem to sell or make intros on your behalf?
I think a lot of people struggle with it, Nick. Obviously, if they work at Rubrik, they're incentivized to do the same thing as me. If they're one of our channel partners or someone who gets incentivized, again, through their comp plan, gets paid by helping me get a deal done, that's a pretty easy conversation. I think where it gets interesting, and like you guys are very well known in your spaces generally, but like you build a reputation for yourself, right? As a good person who has integrity, transparency, who's building a business. You find other people like that, and then you're just trading information, doing like some horse trading from friendship, accountability, relationship, et cetera. You leverage that over time. So it doesn't always work out in a one-for-one, but over time you end up paying people back. They pay you back for helping get into an account or have a conversation with someone.
One of the things I was guilty of as an AE is I would set my top 20% of accounts in the beginning of the year, and I'd do like an ABCD tiering. And then I would never revisit it. So how often are you revisiting it? What are some things that prompt you to revisit it? Talk to us about just ongoing territory prioritization across the year.
Yeah, this is such a great thing to think about because I've been guilty of that before as well. As I go through that top 20%, when I learn things about them that preclude me from potentially having an opportunity there, like, hey, we just signed a 3-year agreement with your competitor. It's across all the platform. You have no shot talking to us or doing anything with this, goes to the bottom. And then it's that next account up scenario where you're always sliding and iterating. Jen, to your question, I look at that monthly, quarterly for sure. I have Google alerts on most of my top accounts, if not like the top 40%. So if I see something that creates a compelling event, boom, I go back to the spreadsheet, I'm inlaying that into the data, and I'm moving accounts up if that's applicable to them. And then, like I said, moving accounts down when I learned something like, we don't have a shot there.
Jen, you said you did A, B, C, D. Jacob, I'm not sure how many letters or numbers you're doing. Do you have guidance for folks about how granular in tiering they should get?
Something I've seen work well is actually going away from A's and 1s and 2s and going to what I would call hyper-focus. Hyper-focus is your top 20%. I know everything about them. I know that the CISO, his son plays soccer here. He probably would be really mad that I knew that because it's security, but I know everything about those people. The next set is what we would call focus, right? So we know 50% of the things we need to know about them. We know enough to be dangerous. And then that bottom set is just waiting to be slotted in. When I learn something in the top 2, hyper-focus or focus doesn't align, I got to bring them out. Let's bring someone else up.
So I've been really curious about prospecting into CISOs because I go on LinkedIn and it seems like every couple weeks I see an angry post from a CISO saying, I hate salespeople, stop calling me, stop emailing me. And then some cheeky salesperson will write in the comment like, how should we get your attention? And they'll always respond and say, we'll reach out to you when we're ready. And I could see a lot of salespeople who sell to security saying, well, I guess I'm going to wait for the inbound, but I know you can't do that. I'm curious, Jacob, for folks who are prospecting into security, into CISOs, what are some things that they need to know that might be different than prospecting into other personas?
Actually, for anyone who's in security like me, those posts are fantastic learning opportunities. Like I save those posts and go back to them because they are indicators of like how to get to these people. I think you need to go into it with the mindset that you're selling to a sensitive persona. And I don't mean that emotionally sensitive. I mean, like these are people that are tasked with keeping their organizations, the data, people's identities safe. So you need to have that in your mind when you go try to talk to them where like, you shouldn't be sharing too much. maybe you're not actually referencing other customers, because a lot of CISOs will say, hey, if you're going to come to me and tell me about other customers that aren't publicly referenceable, you'd probably do that to me. So let's not do that. So it's thinking about things like that. I think that the other part of it, and this is an interesting story I'll share. There was a CISO who I prospected into for months and months and months. And I was worried I was going to get put on the bad list. And I learned that that person was going to be in an event. I went to the event. I approached that person and I just said, hey, listen, I've been reaching out to you. Hopefully you've gotten my messages. Hopefully they resonated. And what was super fascinating is that that CISO actually said, oh yeah, I've gotten your messages. They're pretty spot on. The timing is off. Like, we don't need to make a purchase. We're not considering this, but you're in my saved file and it's rare to get into my saved file. And so that story is not a pat on my back. It's more just, if you are doing things the right way, you're not being aggressive, you're not sharing sensitive details, and you're relevant to things they care about, your day will come. Just, Nick, to your point, it might be a year from now. You have to keep doing your job, but you need to do it like sensitively. You need to bring them something that matters to them. And then going back to something we talked about earlier, your reputation in your industry or community matters deeply, because that CISO or that CIO or someone is probably backvetting you with somebody and asking like, hey, do you know this Jacob Karp guy? Is he a jerk? Is he cool? Should I ever talk to him? And if you built that, you will eventually make your way to a meeting, or being told, hey, we're not having a meeting, but that's a good answer as well.
What are some places that are unconventional that you've seen CISOs gather, or places where you've tried to go out and be an observer and just, let me just understand what they talk about, what they think about, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I think what's nice is that a lot of CISOs are becoming more publicly available. They'll show up at certain conferences. They'll do keynotes. So I always try to show up at those, you know, sit in the audience, say hello at the end, not pitch them and just say, hey, appreciate what you said here. I think that stuff is kind of obvious, Jen. I've heard of some interesting scenarios where CISOs gather at a gym or they go hiking together. And no, you should not show up to those things unannounced, because that's going to get you on the bad list with CISOs. But if you do these things the right way and you let them know, hey, I learned about this, can I show up? Can I bring a food truck to the end of your hike? Do something that gives them a little bit of value, but also is like super non-aggressive.
I'm curious about your messaging in your outreach, because if I think about the typical tech prospecting paradigm, it's like, okay, my prospecting email is like line of personalization to get your attention, call out a problem that I think you might be experiencing, give a one sentence on the solution, and then have a open-ended, open to learning more CTA. That's been the main type of prospecting message that I've seen people champion as a best practice. I'm curious if you feel that might be different in prospecting to the security persona.
Definitely. So I think one thing in the security space that I personally have eliminated is the personalization. I have found that people are over that situation. I think the CISOs generally are. I'm looking for relevance, right? I'm going to go find something that someone in the company publicly stated, whether that's a revenue growth goal, a business trajectory goal, a challenge that they're facing, risk mitigation, decreased cost. It might come from a quarterly report. It might come from an investor presentation. It might come from a keynote. I am going to use that as my beacon. Your CEO or whomever said that you are on a growth trajectory of 30% by 2030. I know that in your industry, reputational and revenue harm takes place when cyber attacks happen. Here is why. And I don't even really talk about what Rubrik does. I'm more like, from a generalized perspective, we help people circumvent this. If this resonates with you, let me know and we can chat. The CTA is just like, did this resonate with you? But the top of that is so, value would be the wrong word, but it's relevant. Like, it's hitting them. And again, like, I probably, Nick, I end up in that inbox of talk to later, but I'm okay with that, because when something bad happens to a company and they have to make a decision very quickly on a vendor, they go to that talk to later folder and I'm ready to have that conversation.
One more question for you. We're talking about email and what you're putting in that email. Cold calling, security, kosher, not? What's your take?
It's probably not kosher. Like, they don't pick up. Let's put it that way. But here's the part of it that I use. I'm a voicemail leaver. People will laugh at this, but the voicemail is part of the POV. So if I email you and I LinkedIn message you, you don't respond, I call you, I leave a voicemail. It's super short. They never call me back. But what it's really doing from a psychological perspective is I'm always trying to be the person that can solve this problem if and when it becomes super problematic and they have to call somebody.
All right, what about video?
I haven't tried it in security. I think I'm scared, Jen. I think I'm also scared of ending up somewhere deep in the bowels of Reddit, which, by the way, is somewhere I go to do some account research sometimes because you'll learn some great things. But I think I'm terrified of that. Another interesting thing in security, if you go to approach a CISO or a security person, if you have a link, a JPEG, an image, a video, it goes straight into never getting to them because a firewall catches it or a different security component never lets it get to those people. Because if they got that link and they clicked it and it was a phishing scam and their whole company went down, not only are they fired, but that company is in serious trouble. So you have to like think about how you deliver these things, which is another thing going back to like, how do you address CISOs and CIOs? Are they going to be scared off by the fact that I literally sent them a video or a link and they're never going to click it anyway?
Frequency of outreach. How frequently do you reach out to these folks?
I try to be pretty sensitive with this. I've worked in orgs where I've seen this happen. I'm not trying to reach out with such frequency that it looks like we're just spamming the crap out of everyone. I don't use formal automated cadences, but when I build out a thought process of like how I'm going to reach out to these people, I don't say to myself day 3, day 7, day 11. And this is something interesting that has worked for me in my career. I gut check it. I have these to-dos on my calendar or I have a waterfall of how I want to reach out to accounts, but it might be completely at random. Like I might reach out to somebody and I might not hit them again for 17 days. And there was no reason for it to be 17 days. It just was my organic thought process on how I want to hit them again. And I could be wrong, but I think for people, there's a genuine nature of that where they're like, this isn't just some crap sequence that every 3 days is going to send me an email, like thoughts, agree, checking in kind of thing.
I want to go back to something you lightly referenced that I'm super curious about, which is you mentioned Reddit. Now, Reddit, I would not have thought for what you sell into. So talk to us about how you use that to better craft your outreach.
So I don't know the stat on this, but Reddit is quickly becoming one of the largest search engines because there's just so much sitting in it. So if you went in and you typed in like selling to CISOs, you could very well come across some threads that they'd mostly be like dark internet stuff. But at the same time, like there might be some value in there. I think you can learn about how people are approaching different security protocols. You can go deep into that. You can find things about companies that they don't publicly share. Again, the CISO might be like, don't bring this to me because I don't want to know where you found it. But it informs part of my account research. Like, hey, they are having a problem protecting this segment of their data. That helps me if I get into the right conversation, right?
So are you mostly looking at what salespeople in Reddit are saying about selling to CISOs? Or you're saying there's like CISO to CISO conversations happening on Reddit?
What it's more of is actually, unfortunately, like disgruntled employees sharing too much on Reddit. There's also obviously a lot of sales threads selling to CISO, selling into different segments. But like if you hit the right search words, like you'll find some things.
One of the things that I'm picking up from you is you're not deeply personalizing or you're not referencing customers that are not publicly referenceable because the folks that you're selling to, their job is to protect their organization's information. And I have to imagine when you get on a first call with somebody, like that first discovery call, I bet some of these security folks are even more closed off, camera off, very one-word answers. Is there anything that you do to get those folks to open up?
It can be frustrating, but I also understand where it comes from. When I get onto a first call, the way that I approach this to try to get people talking is to come with information that publicly available that I know that they know is out there. I'm trying to establish credibility. I'm not trying to establish rapport because I think there's a lot of time wasted in any industry on that. I don't need to talk to them about the weather. I don't know if they like sports. I don't know. What I'm trying to show them is I spent time to think about how I can help you. I identified some things that you guys have said publicly in the market, and I state that to them because I want to make it known, like, I didn't go find this on Reddit. So I bring that to light and I have found that will help open up the conversation. there is still some hesitancy for sure. But like leading with that credibility shows that you're not just some guy or gal looking for a commission check. You're actually there to help them.
Oh my gosh. Jacob, this has been phenomenal. But we're running out of time. And so we got to move to the final question. We've talked about a lot of really great things salespeople should be doing. Now I got to ask you about a shouldn't. What is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts them more than it helps?
Yeah, I'm actually going to give you two and I'll make it quick. One, spending time in places that is not going to net anything out. We talked at length about that. You cannot waste that time if you are on a quota and you have other things to do. And then two, being overly aggressive, not leading with value, and not coming from a perspective of trying to help your prospects, you will quickly be weeded out, especially if you're selling into the industries and sectors that I am.
Killer. Jacob, thank you for joining us. Everybody stick around for a 60-second recap coming up. Today's deal acceleration cheat code is brought to you by Pipedrive, which is a CRM built by sellers for sellers. The best way to drive your pipeline forward is to every single day pull up a list of all of your open opportunities and look at each opportunity by stage and think, what can I do today that will increase my likelihood of winning this deal? That's how you keep your ops moving forward in between meetings that you have on the calendar. Now, we documented 5 cheat codes that can help you cut your sales cycle in half with Pipedrive. There's a link in the show notes to steal them.
This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes. Your ZoomInfo actionable insight tactic is called Jane's Moving Up. Why? Because that's the email subject line you'll use when you get a real-time notice that your prospect Jane just got promoted. From there, in the email, explain how ZoomInfo helps rising sales leaders win their first 90 days on the job by highlighting coaching opportunities or supporting a team-wide prospecting push. And you can try out this trigger-based email template for prospect promotion and 4 other scenarios inspired by ZoomInfo's go-to-market plays. Link in the show notes.
Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Woodpecker. When you're sending a sales email, you generally want to avoid putting punctuation in the subject line. If you've got an exclamation point, it makes it seem like you're shouting at them, look at this amazing offer, and a question mark just smells salesy, so avoid punctuation. Now, if you want to steal my full sales cadence from my friends at Woodpecker, there's a link in the show notes for you to go get it and try it for free.
Your top 4 actionable takeaways from this episode with Jacob Karp. Number 1, if there is a really tough to break into account that you're trying to get traction with, if you see somebody at the account speaking at a conference or trade show, go to their talk and sit in that talk. At the end, introduce yourself to the speaker, not to pitch your thing, but to comment on how great this thing was and make a point of connection with them. Number 2, when you are prospecting into more sensitive industries, don't name drop not publicly referenceable customers, because the customer that you're prospecting is going to say, wait, are you going to tell the world that I'm using you? I'm a CISO. I don't want that. So be careful with who you name drop.
Number 3, if you're selling into a CISO, your goal is to get into the talk to folder. Meaning, when things happen that are bad in a CISO's world, it moves really fast. So you want to be that place that they go to. You want to be in that folder so that they know who to contact when something bad happens. And number 4, think creatively with our outreach. We are not just limited to emails and phone calls and DMs. Jacob talked about the idea of, if you know there's a group of CISOs coming together to do a hike, maybe offer to put a food truck at the end and just be present where they're coming together. Now, Mick, how can our listeners help us out today?
Well, folks, if you've not yet subscribed to 30 Minutes to President's Club, you might want this to pop into your inbox or into your podcast feed whenever a new episode drops, which is pretty frequently. It gives you something to listen to when you're driving your food truck up to the mountains to hand out burritos to the CISOs. But seriously, if you haven't followed or subscribed to the show, I recommend you do it. It would help us out a lot. We'll see you next week on the show.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes. Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes.